Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, and I'm joined by two of the most intrepid co-hosts this side of the galaxy.
That is James, who is silent. I am Vanessa Hoskins.
I thought I was silenced by somebody else. I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
And silencing no one is our fantastic guest today. We have with us the Starfinder Society developer, the legendary Jenny Jar... the legendary Jenny Jarzabski.
You got it. Yes, you did warn us that you were going to do that. Hello. I'm apparently legendary now. I'll take it.
You congratulations. You got a promotion. You're so legendary that I couldn't help but fumble tongue over it. Well, welcome to No Direction Beyond. We're really happy to have you. We have a long tradition of having the Starfinder Society developer here. I'm sure for no special reason whatsoever, right?
Oh, of course.
No, I mean, never.
They're the Starfinder Society developer. They know what's going down.
Oh, truly, might know a few things, yeah.
And I'm sure that Jenny will have plenty of things to tell us today. But before we do, we have a tradition here on the No Direction Network that whenever we have a new Paizo staff member or a major face in gaming in general, we like to ask them, how did you get into gaming? Because really nobody's story is exactly the same. And if you're willing, Jenny, we're hoping you'll tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. Is this more about just gaming in general or gaming as a profession? Or both?
Yes.
Both.
Okay. All right. Awesome. So yeah, that's a great question. So I like to joke that I was a GM before I ever knew what one was. As a kid, I was always orchestrating these like games of pretend with other kids, kind of like LARPing, I guess, again, before I knew what these terms were. And a lot of us, I think, probably did that. But I was always the kid who decided on the games we played and kind of assigned roles. I'd play the villain if needed, you know, if someone else wanted to be like the hero or the princess, it's like, all right, fine, I'll do that. So I feel like I always facilitated that, but never really had a name for it. I did start doing some like text-based forum RPGs in high school, as many of us did, honing writing skills there as well. Then it wasn't really until college that I had a friend invite me to play Pathfinder. Before that, I'd played one D&D game. I think it was 2E. And it's not that I didn't like the system, but the day that I came in, they were doing loot and all of that paperwork just scared me right off. And I just like shut down. So I'm sure it was like a super fun game, but that was a bit of a turnoff. But once I got into this Pathfinder game, I just got hooked on it. And so I started going to Pathfinder Society as well, just to get more content, more games. I started volunteering with PFS, and that's kind of how I got into gaming. Cool. Yeah. And from there, sorry, I feel like I'm just like talking so much. Tell me if you have questions about it.
But you've got quite a story. Now you got to tell us about how you got into that dev chair. It's a very coveted position. You know?
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, so I started going to conventions as a volunteer. And, you know, they always say that networking is super important and it's not like, it's not what you know, but who you know, which is and is not true. It's good to definitely get to know people in the industry and to pick their brains and talk to them. And so I kind of got lucky in that when I was volunteering, I was a second year, I think, at Gen Con, I did some HQ slots and I sat down and they had a couple of Paizo employees come up to relieve some other volunteers from downstairs. And a gentleman I'd never met sat beside me. And he was very friendly and we ended up chatting about games and writing. And I ended up finding out this is Owen Casey Stevens, who I had no clue who he was. And I was like, I was talking to like one of the like Paizo people, but I had no idea of that. And we talked about writing and gaming and he's like, hey, if you ever want to write, just, you know, I have a third party company, send me an email, give me a writing sample. We'll see. I did. He took me up on that. He gave me a chance. And from there, I had a couple of small things published, like Rogue Genius Games. I met Jason Eric Nelson, and I started doing a couple things for Legendary. So it's funny we say Legendary. I do have an affiliation with them, at least. So I did some third-party stuff. And from there, I then had the writing, and I submitted to Wayfinder, too. So I was then able to have a resume that when I went to Paizo people and said, hey, I'd love to write for you, dev, I had something to point to. And it's funny because this is actually the third time I've applied for for a job at Paizo. The time that I actually got this job.
Okay, third time's a charm, huh?
Yeah, because the first time I ever applied was back then, probably like 5 years ago, right after I'd started writing for Paizo, or writing just freelance for different companies. I sent in an application for the developer position. I think it was just a Pathfinder developer. And they said, well, you don't really have any industry experience, so we're going to have to turn you down. However, we did like your writing samples, so would you like to freelance? So I said, heck yeah. So I started working on like AP back matters and like rules, doing like articles and things like that. Slowly got into working for writing for Organized Play. Sorry, I think there's some background noise for me. Started to get into that. And then a couple years ago, I applied for the org play position again, but I think I wasn't really ready to move. So I ended up kind of backing out of that. But then now it's like I've applied for it the third time and now I'm here. So I think it's just 6 years of freelancing for Paizo at this point. So yeah, just making those contacts, having a ton of work under my belt, mm-hmm. all of that is what led to me being able to get this job on staff.
Awesome.
I also organize plays in chat and they say, we are so glad to have you.
Thank you.
They also suggested that there was a drinking contest you had to win in order to get this position. Is that fabrication?
I don't think we can confirm or deny that, but maybe a little bit of a test of the Starstone thing to become more play deaf.
No, that I do believe.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, usually when we have people on and they tell us their stories, they tell us like this crazy, like convoluted, twisty, turny, like path. And yours feels like the logical path, honestly. Like, this is how, like, oh yeah, this is how I would expect to get a job. That makes sense.
There's a lot of career changes usually as part of it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I started as an architect and then I moved to interpretive dancing. And while I was dancing, I met a game designer and that game designer told me that I should learn how to make craft cheeses. And that's how I became a Paizo designer. Like, what?
That's funny.
Well, Louis Loza does have a crazy story. That's true.
Oh, that was great. So speaking about things that are great, that's a really important time for the Starfinder Society right now, isn't it?
It is.
Oh.
Why and, is that?
Well, we do have a brand new year coming up, or a season, if you'd rather, with an all-new metaplot.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So before you tell us about this brand new metaplot, can you give us a quick rundown on like what happened in season 3? Like, you don't have to go into spoilers, but like set the stage for this announcement you're about to give us.
Sure. Okay. So for those of you who haven't been playing at home, or if you've just missed things, so Starfinder Society, as you know, like beginning of season 3, there was a villain called Dash who was orchestrating a lot of things. She had this multimedia smear campaign going against the society. It turns out she was actually trying to just topple Abadar Corp completely and take over herself. So she had a lot of things going on and the society was able to actually take her down. So at the end of that last season, beginning of season 3, we had a choice it was at Gen Con during the interactive special. They were able to choose whether they wanted to bring Dash in, take her prisoner sort of for her crimes, or if they were just going to just outright kill her out of revenge for their friends that she had, you know, orchestrated their deaths and all these other things.
And
most of them overwhelmingly chose to spare Dash. They stayed their hands. So Dash was defeated. She is currently in the Lorespire Complex's Adamantine Bastille, which, yes, that's a thing. She's currently in a holding cell. And at that point, our new First Seeker, Ehu Hadif, stepped up as Luwazi El-Sabo stepped down. And he decided he wanted to, in the absence of some threat like Dash or the Jinsouls from the Scoured Stars, mm-hmm. he wanted to get back to the roots of society with exploring, going out into new places in the vast, revisiting old planets that we had seen in the past. So we had a whole year of almost like a peaceful, happy time. We had three, instead of a big meta plot, we had three different series. We had the Vast Experiment, which was all about getting new spaceships for the society and the things we did along the way to choose which corporation would make those for us. We had, we had the Fleeting Truths, which was all about some, that is a high level series about some Mysteria data fragments scattered across the galaxy that Starfinders were out retrieving. And I can't tell you what happened there because that is majorly spoilers. You need to play that one if you want to know. The final one's coming out like in a couple months here. And we also had the Frozen Ambitions series, which deals with a strange threat emerging in the Vescarium in near space, having to do with Shimmerstone from Vesk 8, which is for some reason being turned into this like combat enhancing drug. And we still are waiting on the final installment, so I won't spoil how that ends. But we essentially had a society that was able to kind of spread itself thin and go out, explore, report, cooperate, look into its own interests. And unfortunately, while that was going on, there has been a threat looming on the horizon that none of us have. Well, maybe some of us have predicted, but none of us saw coming.
Oh.
And we have announced it, but that is the year of the data scourge.
Ooh. Oh. I'm so excited.
Look
I'm
at this
so
art
excited.
For the year of the data scourge. There's robots. Mm-hmm. Robots everywhere.
Yep.
They must be vanguards. They all have shields.
What a good name, Data Scourge.
So before you tell us more about the Data mm-hmm. Scourge, we have a couple of questions in chat that
absolutely
people would like to ask you. Our friend Hillary Moon Murphy wants to ask you, how did writing Datch prepare you to create Starfinder Society storylines? Are you Datch's creator?
Well, I'm Datch's co-creator. Okay. Thirsty and John created the concept of Datch. They gave her to me to meld and form for Pact World Warriors, which was year 201. And then, so I was able to create the end caps for Datch in Pact World Warriors. And then, of course, in The Last Bite, which was the special that I wrote for Gen Con last year. So in a way, there were a lot of other authors touched her, but I was given the great opportunity to characterize her and kind of decide like what her first look was like, as well as her last moments. Well, could have been her last moments. Thanks, by the way, for not killing her. So I think with Datch, though, that prepared me for collaboration with other developers for sure, but also just thinking about, so what is it that motivates, what makes a good plot? Like what makes you as a player want to run your character through a story? And there's several motivators for sure, but one of them is something Thirsty always likes to say, which is we want to have a threat that has a punchable face. Like you want a villain that you can punch them. Like, you know, it may take a while, you may get knocked down, but like you as a player and as an organization, you can defeat them, you can face off with them. That is satisfying. And you also want this to be a villain that you want to punch, but maybe it feels a little guilty when you do. I don't know, maybe. So I think getting to work on Datch prepared me for getting to work on future villains that you are yet to meet.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about what threats and villains await us in the year of the Data Scourge?
Sure. Well, you said robots, and there are definitely some robots in that art. So, chat, you're silly. You are so silly. So, the year of the Data Scourge primarily refers to a series of digital attacks that happens simultaneously across the Pact Worlds, starting with one fateful day, which the players of the intro to the Year of the Data Scourge scenario will experience firsthand. So these digital attacks happen and they disrupt Pact World's infosphere completely. So while that's going on, there are these strange robotic attackers that arrive and begin to attack various points in the Pact Worlds, but they seem to be concentrating on the Lorespire complex. So it almost seems like this, whatever this is, has some kind of problem with the society for some reason. Or maybe they're just caught in the crossfire. I don't know. So you're going to have to deal with a lot of technological disruption. There should also be some magitech as well. You'll have robotic attackers, things like that. And I don't know, just a little bit of everything.
Captain James Forrest from chat asks, is Triune finally trying to ruin us?
I don't know. I don't think I can answer that question.
Okay. I got another question maybe you can ask. Sure. John Godek, No Direction's own John Godek asks, will we have more 11 to 14s and beyond?
So currently what we have slotted, I always would love to have more high level Starfinder content. I love it. We currently do not, here, let me check actually. Check my document. Loading, please.
Oh, she's pulling up the secrets.
I can pull up the secret document.
This is going to be a fly on the wall. A virus in the database.
Whoa.
Is your data storage intact?
Well, it may not be because I'm having trouble pulling it up now.
Oh, no. Goodness.
I thought I already had this document up. I apologize. Okay. So currently we do have another one slated. It's going to be kind of a season ender or kind of a season climax later in the year. We also have a couple of 9 to 12s and some 7 to 10s. So when I'm looking at my plan for this season, we have a lot of low level and mid level content, but I think we do have a few more of the higher level scenarios than we did this past year. So we're hoping that by having all these lower level scenarios this year, that we fostered that ability that you can get some people leveled up in your lodges and, you know, get a group together. Cause I know a big complaint is I hear people say, well, I would love to play high level, but I don't have a group, a local mm-hmm. group that wants to play. But of course, us being digital for our digital threat year is a way that you can connect with people from other areas. So, you know,
yeah, it's a way to get a game, but okay. Little Starfinder is a different beast than boy, it is fun.
It's a lot of fun. I especially like around like level 10 where like the math starts to change, and
yeah,
at that point you start feeling like a titan. I had a great experience in Dead Sons where like we hit level, what was it? It was like level 11, and then all of like just mobs of enemies got thrown at us, and I was like, they're missing me. What is this? I'm not being brutalized.
It's where you really start to feel like powerful and competent. Yeah. Whereas mm-hmm. for the first couple of levels, you're just like, I'm gonna miss with these two attacks, and so we're just gonna keep rolling. Attrition's real. They only have so much ammo.
If I throw enough dice, they'll die.
We do have a couple more questions from chat too. More just on, because we were talking about levels. John Godek follows up with, yay, how high will the 4-00 special go?
So at the moment, we don't have that one. So our special, sorry. So yes, our Gen Con special is just going to be a 1-8 this year. That is for Pathfinder and Starfinder.
Fantastic.
We found that having the higher levels than that, it, when you have such a disparity, like we talked about possibly translating up and having a special that started at mid levels and went mm-hmm. to high levels, but we really do want to have those first, you know, those low level slots for your new characters and new players to be sure. part of it at a convention. So yes, 1-8 will be those specials this year.
Do you think you might consider what I know Pathfinder Society has done in the past with their limited level specials in allowing you to sort of spotlight one of your higher level characters at the table in a guest capacity, whether that be through one of those table boons or some other way that they might be able to come on the scene and take care of some stuff for you before heading off?
That's a really cool idea that they've used for sure. And it's mm-hmm. something that we talk about all sorts of things we plan as a team. So
sure.
definitely don't count it out that it might happen in the future for sure.
Because that would be a lot of fun.
No, that's
definitely
a cool idea. Yeah,
a big
it
plan
is.
Of a big plan. I'm definitely a big fan of like in the end of first edition Pathfinder Society, where they had the event with like the Gallows Spire was happening, but then like simultaneously the passing the torch was happening at the same time. I really like that as a concept for like, oh, well, the society is mainly doing this, but you special high level Starfinder agents are doing this. Here, take this special scenario and get yourself brutally destroyed by the worst undead in the game in this special.
Yeah, that's a good way to parse between this, because yeah, most of your players, when you do go to Gen Con at specials, are your lower levels anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, cool. We have some other fantastic questions from chat. Chat, keep them coming. We have some talk about Ivareth. Northern Dreamer wants to know, are we going to see the return of Iroveth and where she came from? Because she was super cool and only to show up at the end of 3-00.
There's a lot of questions about Salvation's End in the chat.
Yeah. Wait, how about this? Let's just cover all of them. What can you tell us about Salvation's End and how it's going to wrap up?
Well, Salvation's End is something that's definitely ongoing. Okay. I recommend that everyone play the Clone Batch Catastrophe, which has just come out, for more about Salvation's End. But that is still very much an ongoing plot element, because while we know where that's going, that is not something that we are letting you know yet. So there's a lot more exploring the society needs to do in that space. As for Aroiveth, they may show up at a later time. There are quite a few characters that you may see showing up this year and into next year that I have specific plans, hashtag plans for, that I that I can't reveal yet, but I think you are going to see some very familiar faces soon, so don't worry.
All right.
A Little Muffin has a little question for you. What hints or secrets can you tell us about the year of the Data Scourge?
Other than what I've already said, and I'm actually going to tie this in to a question I just saw, which is that someone asked, I think it was actually John Goddick asked, how many plot arcs there will be. So season four, or year four, is different, because unlike with our third year, where we had the three kind of like smaller plot lines that you could explore, we are going to have one overarching meta plot for the season. The Data Scourge is a singular meta plot. There is a single threat villain that is attacking the Pact Worlds and the society. And there will be a trajectory toward trying to foil that villain or that force's plans. So that will be the singular meta plot. And all of the scenarios that are part of that meta plot are going to have a special stamp on them that will tell you that they are that meta plot. So as much as I'm hoping that all of you love the Year of the Data Scourge, if it turns out it's not your thing, or you have a character that you're not wanting to play as part of that, like maybe you made a hacker or like a some kind of special character for the Data Scourge, but you don't want to play them outside of that, there will be other scenarios that are one shots or that are like loose series that are not part of that. And that way you can just look at the cover of the scenario and tell, this is Year of the Data Scourge, this is not Year of the Data Scourge. So this is my meta plot for the year. This is something I can just play like totally outside. As for secrets, well, we are in the course of these events, we are going to see one of our faction leaders step down, and we are going to see a new faction leader step up. Oh. And that is all I will say.
That's it? That's all we get?
Ooh. All I'll say for now.
That's wonderful. Ooh, the tantalizing secrets.
I feel like we should just guess one at a time and see if she reacts. Yeah.
Process of elimination.
We could never do that. We are professionals.
Yes, yeah, definitely not the Wayfinder adventure captain.
Make good radio. So other than having one of our faction leaders step down, which I am still reeling from that idea, what other new things can we expect to see this season? Anything else?
So this season, a new thing. So like I said, we are going to have some familiar faces step up for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of looking to see what I can tell you.
It might be a thing that you...
We need, IMO, we need a null scenario now that there are no rules in the character deck. give me those laughing hyenas from space. It's gonna be great.
Well, we are, if you're looking for new things, we are going to actually see at the very beginning the release of the culmination of the fruits of our labor in the Vast Experiment series, which is a new society starship, which is the Azada. And I believe you've got the art for that as well.
I do. Look at this beautiful ship. So what is cool about the Azada? We have two ships that are like the shoot you in the face ship and the science ship. What's the Azada's claim to fame?
Other than just being, gorgeous ship. The Azada is technically still in development. It is coming hot off the presses for the new season, but the Azada is meant to be a bit more of a balanced all-rounder ship.
Okay.
We have like the Drake, which is our, our big gunship. We've got the Pegasus, which is, fast and kind of good at, scans and things like that. But we're kind of hoping to present an option that maybe feels a bit more balanced in terms of theme. Now, in terms of mechanics, of course, a big reason for that is that we had the build point changes. So we wanted to address that as well as address potential other rules elements that had changed for starship combat in society without getting rid of the older ships.
Gotcha.
So that is what niche that is meant to serve in the program.
All right.
Very cool.
Well, did the older ships get an update with that? I haven't gotten to do a Starship Combat since that book came out.
No, the older ships have not been updated.
Mm. Northern Dreamer wants to know, ramming prow, do we get to keep it?
I will neither confirm nor deny the ramming prow right now, but gosh, okay. that sure is what everyone wants, is that ramming prow. Oh, heard that God. A lot.
I mean, how fun is it to be in Starship Combat and just be like, I'm going to ram them.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I almost
fun.
Think, though, you shouldn't ram with, like, a graceful, elegant ship like the Izada. You need exactly. a ship like called, like, the Ogre that's, like, yeah. it's got, like, a big hammer for a rim.
Basically.
Freaking spikes on the front. You're yeah, just like, exactly. I'm going to take you down.
I'm pretty sure, and I don't remember because it was written during Wave 2 of SOM. I'm pretty sure one of the starship constructors is like an orc rig off of Apostate. They could totally make an ogre covered in spikes.
They totally could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Very cool. John Goodick recommends a rhino ship. Or...
I guess the theme is that everyone just wants to smack their starship into the enemy starship.
Exactly. Numbetti yeah. says fly through rather than fly by. Mm-hmm.
So I know that Datch makes an appearance in a relatively recent season 3 scenario, right? It's like called Rat's Bite or something like that, or like Last Bite.
The last bite is the special. Rat's Repentance is a scenario that is up and coming, yes. And so, Datch is going to show up again.
Yeah, I was gonna say, does that mean that we're gonna like is she potentially a character that we're gonna see more of in season 4, season 5, season 20?
Season 20, yeah. Season 20. From your mouth to Tryon's ears, but not a lot right now. So Datch is definitely going to, because you, and I say you looking at chat, looking at the Starfinders out there, you decided not to kill her. So you have given me license to use her again. And it's funny because I remember this time last, I think it was around this time last year, the year before, Thirsty was on a panel and he had his like nice little white conspiracy board. And he was, one of the things on there was Venture Captain Datch. And I remember being in chat and everybody calling it out and everyone freaking out about, oh my God, Venture Captain Datch. And that is, while that is not the current trajectory I have planned for Datch, I mean, anything's possible, I suppose. But she sure will be around. I don't expect her to be a major character this year. I don't think she'll be recurring constantly, but she definitely exists in the universe and you may come into contact with her again.
Okay.
She says just, coward do it in chat.
Can I just tell you, I was behind the scenes. You. I was behind the scenes before that, that panel with Thirsty and saw that.
Yeah.
And I have information that I am sitting on. He says a lot when he's having a good time. Let's just say that.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Chat would like to hail Venture Captain Datch. So I guess if you ever want Shadow Lodge in space, go.
Yeah, for it. Yeah, I was about to say, he's like a she's like a Grandmaster Torch.
Yeah.
Well, that or push her into the matter converter.
It's been in a hot tub. She just rides on like a floating apple.
It's an apple-shaped hot tub, yeah, for sure. Oh my God.
Oh,
no, but come on, so I'd make things. Her a faction leader. I wouldn't make her a venture captain. Like, come on now.
Definitely, aww. Definitely. Oh. So I thought was interesting. Season 3 was all about exploration, right? And mm-hmm. by a very cruel twist of fate, we're not getting the exploration focused Starfinder rulebook until like next month.
Yeah.
So, are there any plans to do any I mean, obviously we don't really know what's in GEM right now, but are there plans to use any of the exploration content in GEM in season 4 and beyond?
Currently that's something that I'll have to, like, the team will definitely be reviewing as part of our like additional resources review. So at the moment I can't really say whether we will or not, but again, even though this was our big exploration year, not everything is going to tie into the meta plot all the time. So there will be room for those, you know, go out and explore the planet of the week type scenario, or, you know, go out and look for some kind of like lost artifact, or go have some starship combat. So we definitely will pull in resources as we find appropriate into society.
Oh no! All of the Paizo Starfinder devs are here. John Compton is now saying Venture Captain Datch's first policy will be to add SOM's ECM weapons to the Azada starship. Mm-hmm. Oh no!
I thought you were on my side, John.
No, that would be great. I want to see those. I want to see the Azada with mines. That's what I want to see.
No, it's got to be the ogre.
The ogre with the ramming prow and the mines.
Yeah, it's great. Okay. That's all you need. You just need the ogre. It's great.
Oh gosh.
So we've talked a lot about the different types of themes that are in that are coming up in season 4. Obviously, when we had Thirsty on in season 2 and season 3, he used to talk about how like he had this like this goal for Starfinder Society. Now that you're the person who's steering the ship, how do you feel that your particular touch is influencing the trajectory that Starfinder Society is taking?
Good question. I feel like this year, year 4, was the kind of the baton pass from Thirsty to me. It was actually really amazing to have the chance to get to plan a lot of that with him. Like that was our joint effort. He kind of took me behind the curtain and showed me. Like I thought I knew some things before because like we've been friends for a while, but we've also been had a working relationship as a contract worker and a dev. But he took me behind the curtain and he's like, look at all this. And that conspiracy board is nothing, by the way. Like there's a whole lot out there. So we talked about that and we were able to do a lot of planning together. Then when he moved into the Pathfinder role, I took over and I kind of refined and honed some ideas of my own. So I really see this year as kind of something that my friend and colleague and I got to create together. Oh. But that is definitely going more in my direction now that I am in charge of it. Yeah. And I feel like going into year 5 is going. So this year, you're definitely going to see like my direction, but you'll see Thirsty's influences. You'll see kind of the foundation he's built for the program. But and moving into year 5, I also have plans now.
Oh, good. So,
and they have somewhat diverged from my dear colleague Thurston's, but there are definitely some things that I shall keep them, I think.
Does it have to do with sexy existential androids?
It does not.
Oh, okay. Just wondering.
It does not.
Just throwing that out there.
So back in the day when second edition was new and green and John was still doing scenarios, the two of them used to do this really silly thing where like Thurston was in charge of Starfinder and John was doing a lot with second edition Pathfinder. And then they would just randomly swap and write each other's scenarios. Do you plan to do any crazy swaps with Thirsty in the future?
Love to. We've talked about a few different like dark pacts that we've made.
The darkest of pacts.
The darkest of pacts to switch out scenarios. I think it may happen, especially now that I feel like both of us really are kind of getting a handle because we basically have shuffled. He's moved into Pathfinder. I've moved up to Starfinder. So we've both kind of had to get situated in our new programs and get a handle on things. But I think if he wants to, I'm always down to collaborate and switch things up, but we already plan a lot together though. Like he'll run things by me and I'll run things by him all the time.
Nice.
So
that sounds really great, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what is born of your special, infernal powers.
Me too. That'll be good.
I have an important question. What role will Strawberry Machine Cake take in season 4?
Strawberry Machine Cake. I'm sure they're out there somewhere doing concerts. Nothing set in stone at the moment. You're asking all the hard questions.
I mean, the people want what the people want. And by the people, I mean me.
Fair. I'll keep it in mind.
The people want what the people want. And what they want is Strawberry Machine Cake.
Indeed.
Fair enough.
A Rainbow Dreadnought Overdrive, one or the other. I'll take what I
that is a great
that's a good name. One I like that one. Yeah.
But, that's really
thank
good
you.
I mean I can't be the only one who's like seen the Starfinder threads on Facebook and stuff just like randomly pop up with like with a fan-made like album covers for like Abyssal Head and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it's really fun to see like the community really grab onto that aspect of Starfinder Society.
It is.
Lava Being says peace through glitter. I don't know what that's referencing. I just thought it was funny.
Now all of chat is asking for a battle of the band scenario.
That's metal. We just started a whole thing. And by
I'm so sorry if this continues.
That's fine. As some like Scott Pilgrim versus the Pact Worlds thing unraveled before us. Yes. Oh dear God.
Amazing.
Hold on, let me get my pen and write this
just,
down.
Just whoever you do for Scott Pilgrim, like he doesn't need to be dating a high schooler. Like you need to
that. Yeah, we'll leave that. We'll leave that by the wayside. That's fine.
Starfinder thrives most when there's memes. Immovable scenarios. Absolutely. Like so be aware of unicorns, you know? No reason, just be aware of them.
You could take that whole Scott Pilgrim storyline and just make Scott Pilgrim a Vesk and say, Scott Pilgrim's dating a Skittermander.
There you go.
It's the same story, but not worse.
But not creepy. Exactly. Exactly. No, I really love, one thing I love so much about Starfinder Society is the fact that it's a living campaign and how everyone who plays in it, the community, just kind of latches on to certain things. And I like how we make our own memes. We have like our things like, you know, Strawberry Machine Cake and like all the bands and, mm-hmm. and Zoe and all these things that just become these legends in the community. I love that. Also, anytime, send me Starfinder memes. I love them. I have a folder of them. demand tribute.
Very nice.
You had to compile and share them. I love them. I love them so much.
Yeah.
Luckily, we had a meme in our area where everybody bought a fire extinguisher because there's one scenario where we could not fight a fire and it's like 35 credits. Whenever you had a new character, we'd look at the sheet and go, you're missing an item.
the best part is that we just started playing Attack of the Swarm, the adventure path, with like some of my friends who've never played Starfinder before and like my GM who's like read it but has never run it. And like, you know, James and I. So we sit down and like we're going over like what our characters can do. I'm playing a Hanukkah mystic medic named Dr. Raptor.
Oh my God, of course you are.
And so everyone's going over their stuff and what they could do. And someone says, well, what if there's a fire over there? And then James goes, don't worry, I have a fire extinguisher. And I just die. I'm rolling on the ground. And everyone's like, why is having a fire extinguisher so funny? And I'm like, fires will kill you. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. You live in a futuristic society. There was a scenario we just called the cops to help people. Like, places with society. That doesn't happen in a lot of role-playing games.
Mm-hmm. It does.
I think it's stuff like that makes Starfinder Society and Starfinder itself a very unique experience where you go, man, there's a lot of hurt people here. Oh, we don't have to deal with this. There's a payback there.
Yeah.
And it's great. I'm running a home game called Teenage Wasteland where all my players are high schoolers. Mm. And like so they got to like a friend's house and something spooky and weird was going on. And they were like, what do we do? I'm like, are they going to be Scooby-Doo detectives? Are they going to go in? Someone's like, I pull out my phone and I call my dad. And I'm like, okay. She's like, my dad is the general of this, a general in this nation's like thing, right? I was like, yeah. She's like, I'm going to call the army. I was like, oh, the army can come, but it's going to take a few hours. Please do the adventure before the army gets here.
No. Sure, roll out the army. So Jenny, what are you playing these days? Society in addition to, what kind of Starfinder are you getting on?
So I do play and GM some games of Starfinder, mostly Society when I have time. I actually recently did one at a couple of online cons. It was really fun. So I try, it's hard to find time, but I do try to keep up with it. I have a hopefully upcoming Pathfinder game with Thirsty. But you know, he's been kind of busy, so I don't know if that's ever gonna happen. Mm-hmm. But not trying to guilt you or anything, friend. I know you're in there. But yeah, so really it's just mostly Society now. Haven't had a whole lot of time to play APs. Like I keep up with what's going on, but I feel like that's part of the problem is I'm aware of everything that's happening. So I can't really be a good player because I'm spoiled on everything. I'd have to GM and I like to GM, but I don't really have time. So it's like, I'm just this omniscient force right now that like knows Starfinder and sometimes plays Society. And I'm like,
she needs a home game.
I guess I do need a home game for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but So not a ton. I try to play like video games, board games, other things to also just keep it fresh and not just constantly, you know, I love Starfinder, I love Pathfinder, but I think taking like inspiration from elsewhere is, and having other outlets is good too, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so sorry. Everybody's offering you a seat at their table now.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry, chat.
Rest in peace to my DMs now. There it goes.
she's a developer. She doesn't have time for games.
Are there any scenarios that you're writing for season 4?
Yes, I am actually writing the first scenario. So the 40, what would be 401 is actually intro number 3, because we're doing this really cool 3 intro scenario arc to start off our season. Those will be releasing at PaizoCon. First one is going to take you into the society, and I mean, it's experienced players can play it, but it's meant to teach new players and new GMs what the society is, what Starfinder mm-hmm. Society is, and give you get you into those concepts and show you what you can expect in the program. Mm-hmm. Number 2 is an introduction to the 4 major factions, Dataphiles, Exoguardians, Wayfinders. We're not doing the Second Seekers, but we are going to introduce that concept as well. And of course, the Acquisitives. And then the 3rd is going to be a changeable. So those will be evergreens that you can run every year, all the time. Cons, home, or at home, at your local gaming store, whatever. The 3rd one is going to change every year. And it's going to be based on whatever the meta plot is. So it is just simply called intro number 3, Year of the Data Scourge. Short and sweet, self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. But I am writing that. It takes place on Absalom Station when the first digital attacks hit. And it follows a group of Starfinders who are caught in the middle of that, trying to make their way back to the complex. And I think it's going to be pretty cool, but I might be biased.
That's a good setup.
I bet it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So does that mean if that one's being updated with every season, like, is there a limited time to play this version before it goes away?
I'm sorry. Say that one more time. I looked at chat.
Maybe that's okay. Maybe I misunderstood. Like you said, this scenario was being updated every season. Does that mean there's a limited time to play it before it goes away?
No. So it will not go away. You can always play it. It's just that it won't be relevant to the new hotness season. But certainly, if you wanted to, so say we're in, you know, that legendary Starfinder season 20 that Vanessa is talking about earlier. Say we're in season 20, and you're like, I want to go back to the classics. I want to play. You know, well, I wasn't around for Year of the Data Scourge, but that sounds cool. You could just go find it. Oh, Starfinder intro, Year of the Data Scourge, and that would kick off the meta plot, and you could then, again, since we're going to package these differently now, you can cherry pick. Okay, I know that these like 10 scenarios are meta plot. I want to play all of these in this order or in some order so that I can experience the data scourge even after it happens. But next year, you know, year 5, there will be a new one, although it will not replace the old one. It's just that's what we'll be pushing out at you know, PaizoCon or whenever we launch the new season of Starfinder. So
it'll be like, you know, 5-3 intro to Year of the Zoelectric Boogaloo.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, it'll just be like intro whatever. So yeah.
Gotcha.
And when are we getting like the organized play guide for season 4?
So that is also something we're still working on. I believe right now the team is hoping to push that as a PaizoCon release as well. I believe. I know they're sitting in chat right now, so don't quote me on that. They've been working, the rest of our team, like our ops side and our like AR team and our guide team has been working super hard. They're confirming that is the plan. Actually, and I know we were going to plug this a little later, but next week I know they're going to be on the show talking about some more stuff about cons and like operations that I'm not always the operations person. I'm kind of in my little dev cave, and you know, they do a lot of work, a lot of great work. So they can probably tell you more about that next week too, if you come back.
Super awesome.
Paizo OP says they're putting together the Starfinder guide now, and it will be available a few weeks before PaizoCon online.
There we go.
And Linda and Alex, not me, but Linda and Alex S are going to be on the show with Ryan and Parham next week to talk all about PaizoCon online. That's definitely a flagship topic since that affects both Starfinder and Pathfinder.
Oh, so
if you are interested in PaizoCon online, don't miss next week's No Direction.
Yeah, you definitely want to be here to see them for sure.
And this is a good opportunity to talk about the No Direction network as a whole. We here at No Direction have multiple shows, news shows just like this one. We also have a ton of actual play content and several blogs that cover all sorts of gaming information and material and have just free game rules and some of them for your home games, advice, you name it. And you can find that all on nodirectionpodcast.com. You can also join our Discord server, which is one of the most wonderful places to talk about all things Starfinder, Pathfinder, anything in the Paizoverse, you name it, other games. We have an array of things, fantastic channels. So absolutely join us over there. If you think, hey, I've already done all this, well, great. Are you a patron? Because you could also become a patron on our Patreon and support the show so that we can have more awesome content.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we just plugged ourselves. Jenny, is there anything that you would like to plug about yourself or things that you are doing?
Sure. I mean, you know where I kind of live, work, you know, Paizo. You can always find my work in Starfinder Society, of course. But if you do want to have kind of a more casual conversation with me about gaming, just, you know, really anything, I do have a Twitter. It is at Jen Jayski. I'm going to actually type it in chat in case anyone doesn't have it. Oh, sure. Okay, cool. And I also have recently, I have started streaming on Twitch just kind of for fun. And that's been like, we don't always talk about Starfinder and tabletop RPGs, but I do find that the conversation wanders there rather frequently. Mm-hmm. I also saw some of my little, like my Twitch people, like saying some silly stuff in chat earlier that came from the stream. So, you know, there's some shenanigans and joking that goes on there. So if you're ever interested, my channel is Jezebel77, which I am going to either Vanessa could post or I can post in a moment. If you could, thank you so much. That's not strictly professional. That's just for fun. It is, we do sometimes, I will say it is kind of a like 18 plus channel. Like, you know, we do guard that content. So just please don't send your kiddos there, please. Not that we don't like them or anything, but yeah, we don't need to teach them new words. But anyway, so, but if you ever want to talk, like just chat with me or come play games with me, that's mostly where I am. And yeah, again, I'm usually around Paizo related discords, like the org play, stuff like that. I'm pretty easy to reach.
Mm.
That
is good.
You could always message Thirsty though and tell him about your character.
You know what? I heard that there was that one year at PaizoCon where he ran around and like had all the Skittermander boons for people who told him about his character. It was great. Yes. Definitely do that. Who knows what fantastic treasures he'll give you in Pathfinder Second Edition for telling him about his character. Speaking about telling people stuff, Kishmo asks, are there any new scenario tags planned for season 4, like season 3 survival tag? They also seem to have developed I hope you don't have any serious illness, because it's a lot of coughing with the word mecha put in between it every now and then. Cough, cough, mecha, cough, cough, hopefully cough, mecha, cough.
So for new tags, we do have the meta plot tag. That is going to be one of them, like that is delineating, like this is a meta plot scenario and not just a standalone. As for new tags, other than that, I think that by the end of the season, we might see a mech scenario. Possibly. I may have plans for that, but other than that, I think we're going to stick with those tags that we've been using already.
I wonder if someday the meta plot will be a mecha plot.
A mecha meta plot. Anything's possible.
That's meta really mecha great. Plot. We actually got Numbat18 actually has a question for me, yeah. James, and Vanessa. Are we ever going to have a Starfinder private sanctum? Private sanctum is like when the Ryan and Param go chill in the No Direction Discord afterwards. We have with the patrons and in the patron chat. We've attempted to do it a couple of times and we haven't really gotten it really to like explode. So, we're definitely open to it. If you're a patron of No Direction, let us know. Is that something you'd want to do? Do you want to hang out with the three of us and our guest in patron chat? Or Do you have enough of us by the end of the hour and you just want to go on your merry evening? Both of those are legit. I get it. Sometimes I'm done with me by the end of an episode too. I'm really easy to drag places despite my size. I know. You could just grab me. Look at this. I've got like a, you can just pull me by my locks now.
Yeah. I realize that I'm getting like glare off my head. Jeez, so much.
Yeah, no, you got a really close shave this for this new one.
Yeah, it's very, very shiny.
Oh no, now chat wants a strawberry machine cake Voltron mecha.
You are just relentless, chat. Oh my goodness.
I mean, at least if you need a wacky scenario idea, you know where to come. It's no
direction. Yeah, apparently. I would never have wacky scenarios in my season 4. Never. Never, I tell you. No.
We're super serious here at Starfinder.
Yes.
We would never take our player characters and throw them into a virtual reality game where they had to fight a sentient and or holographic version of a computer virus while wearing Melita costumes. We would never do that.
That's no. We would never have a combat cooking challenge on a reality television show. Never.
Never.
No way.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of reality TV shows, previously in chat, Patronus Felix asked, what can you say about the next Zoe Enterprises scenario?
There is one coming up. I can say that.
Ooh, that's going to be exciting. Oh, we have a green James.
We do. I see that. Oh no, it's the year of the Scourge already.
The Scourge is hitting.
Oh God, no.
It's too bad.
What's happening?
So the next Zoe scenario is actually going to be a new show that Zoe is putting out. So,
A new show. That's exciting.
A brand new show.
What?
Well, I can't tell you that, but you'll have to wait and find out.
Is that because the author hasn't written it yet or the outline's still in development?
probably all of the above, but.
Okay. That's really exciting.
But yeah.
All right, cool. Well, fantastic. So it sounds like we're going to have a fantastic season full of strawberry machine cake, Voltron mecha, and...
And it's all going to be produced by Zoe.
Produced by Zoe, yeah. That sounds really good. A battle of the bands and some sort of Scott Pilgrim-vesque with a Skittermander girlfriend. This is going to be...
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
You're the data scourge, folks. Don't miss it.
Thanks for passing your program along to me, Thirsty. It's in great hands.
Although, okay, to be honest, this is the kind of stuff that he would have probably done anyway if he had his way for too much longer.
Definitely. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It is. I may have saved it from a weirder and darker timeline, or I may have made it worse for all you know.
No, I'm sure you're going to make it better. It's always nice to get new voices, new refreshing perspectives when it comes to positions like these. So I'm really excited to see how you take the sort of existing momentum of Starfinder Society and adjust it and mold it and shape it in your own vision. So that'll be cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Indeed.
All right. Any last minute shout outs or things you'd like to mention, Jenny?
Not really. I think I do want to thank everyone for playing and for being part of the community and being part of Starfinder Society and reading comments on the blogs and seeing things on Discord and on Twitter in the past couple weeks has been really nice. And, you know, this has been kind of a rough year or more for a lot of us, but, I feel like I work in a vacuum like we all do, but seeing people, I've got my great coworkers, but seeing people say that they're excited about year 4 and getting hyped about the art, which God, I love that art so much. Like I actually cried when I saw the art the first time I saw it.
Cool.
Oh, Vanessa, I don't know. Did we show the logo or did we just show the half page? If you want to.
So here's the art. I did show the logo briefly, but it is this thing right here. And it just shows how the data is just disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Where is it all going?
It's going somewhere. But I guess I just want to say thank you to everyone because this has been, it's been hard but exciting to step up and be like to move into this position. And knowing that people are excited about where this is going and the decisions I'm making has been really, really good. So thank you. It's very much appreciated. And yes, the logo is so good. It's so good.
Yeah,
so
it truly is. And we very much appreciate having you with us on No Direction Beyond.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, it was a fantastic conversation. Thanks to chat for hanging out with us live in front of a digital audience. So hopefully we don't get a data scourge anytime soon. Oh. Vanessa, we already told everybody where to find us. So is there anything else that we need to do before we sign off?
I don't think so. I told people to go to the website to read all the cool blog material and to listen to all of our other shows and actual play podcasts and such. And we invited them to our Discord server, and we poked loving fun at Param and Ryan. So I think we've done all the things that are on our like list for a standard show. Oh, I'm not sure.
I remember. Here's my list. James, you have a shout out to make.
Oh, I do?
Yeah. Your big interview went live today.
Oh yeah, John G interviewed me. It was a good conversation. I think it went up today on the website. I think I kept it brief. It's fun. I think
I definitely listened to it while I was stuck on the highway for 2.5 hours behind an accident in like a 1 mile stretch of road. It was the only thing that kept me sane. And as James can tell you, I did not stay sane after it ended. I was ready to Mad Max that road. If you are like me and you need a little bit of sunshine to keep you sane when you're trapped on an endless highway, I recommend listening to Presenting. It's John Goddix's podcast, and James is his host. His guest, right?
His guest.
That's what they would. That's what they typically call
those
people.
That's what we call people when you invite them onto a show. They're your guest.
Right. Okay. And speaking of our guests, thank you again, Jenny, for being our guest on No Direction Beyond. And until next time, go beyond with No Direction.